This is All Things Considered on KNKX. I'm Ed Ronco. All nine justices on the state Supreme Court have signed a letter calling on the legal profession, themselves included, to do the hard work of addressing systemic racism. It says the justice system must recognize the role it has played in devaluing black lives, saying, quote, "We cannot undo this wrong, but we can recognize our ability to do better in the future." So what does that look like? To talk about that, we're joined by three of the justices. Chief Justice Deborah Stevens was appointed to the state Supreme Court in 2008, became its chief earlier this year. Justice Mary Yu was appointed in 2014 and is the first LGBTQ justice in state history, has years of experience in the trial courts, is Chinese American and Mexican American. And Justice Helen Whitener joined the court this past April after several years as a Pierce County Superior Court judge. She is the first black woman on the court and also identifies as LGBTQ and disabled. Thank you all for being here. I want to begin by asking about this moment in history with protests across the nation and here in Washington state. How have you been paying attention to it? And Justice Whitener, can we start with you, please?
It's been a very difficult time for me, personally, as well as being in this profession. Seeing someone of my race be killed on camera with observers is very difficult to digest when I'm in a legal profession that is meant to treat all equally, to see all equally, and to try and address all in an equal, unbiased manner. It's been extremely difficult. I thought we were further along than where we are now. I'm speechless.
Justice Yu?
You know, I think for me, I've been angry for a long time about how issues related to race have been ignored. Because we all know, right, that the killing of Mr. Floyd was not the first. So for me, the way that I've been processing this is both with anger that it's taken another life for this to get the attention of everyone. And at the same time, there's a level of gratification deep down that says, finally, finally, we got to the place where everybody's paying attention to this reality. So it's with a lot of mixed emotions. There isn't a time during the day almost that I'm not thinking about it. My office looks right out at the legislative building, and every day there's somebody out there with a sign or protesting. So it's with a lot of mixed emotions.
Chief Justice Stevens.
Yeah, I think that phrase mixed emotions really captures it, because it's powerful to see how people are standing up across the world about this moment. And the things that came together to cause that, you know, I think we probably can never identify how all the threads came together, but that's a positive and powerful moment. But it's also very deeply sad, and it's difficult for those of us who are in a system that calls itself justice to, you know, really take an introspective look at what is our role in the past historically, but also currently. And so, you know, I come at this with that same feeling of, I think this is a really important moment, and I want to seize that because I think it can be a transformative time, but it just comes from such deep and longstanding pain. And that's part of why it was, I think, so important for us as an institution, not just as individuals, to own our role in the history of racism and the current situation.
Justice Whitener, you said that you thought we were farther along. I've also heard people say that they've sort of been living with this reality for a while of where America is in terms of race forever, and other people are just finally catching wise to it. I would imagine there's sort of some conflicting thoughts there about, you know, on one hand, thinking we're farther along, on the other hand, realizing that so many people think we're even farther along and are waking up to the idea that we're not.
Well, I use the word farther along because it can be rather ambiguous. That was deliberate. As a black person, We've always known this, what occurred has been occurring in our community. The only difference we see is now that you see it because of social media and the immediacy of that forum. But when you look at the female in Central Park, understanding her privilege and calling law enforcement on a black man, knowing that if they had responded and he was there, his life basically could have been threatened, given all the things that have been going on. We're now addressing something that the black community has always known existed. Your encounter with law enforcement is a scary one. I have had instances when I'm in a vehicle, you know, I don't have a black robe on. No one knows who I am. If the lights go on behind me, I have to be concerned, not just for myself, but who's in the vehicle with me. I have brothers, you know, I have nephews, and this is nothing new for us. What is new is that the community is standing for those of us who could not stand before. They're vocal about things where we're being heard through their voices, because I still am concerned as to whether or not our voices are being heard in the discussion. But again, we've always had to take the higher ground. And I think what you're seeing is we're tired. We're tired. And I'm not in a position to make anyone comfortable. But yet I have a duty in my profession where I have to remove myself from that. So these are very difficult times for, I think, judicial officers, black judicial officers, and judicial officers of color as a whole.
The open letter from the court is addressed to the legal community, and it talks about how the legal profession often feels bound by tradition. And I want to quote it here. It says, "Even the most venerable precedent must be struck down when it is incorrect and harmful." We know that courts rely on precedent a lot. Chief Justice Stevens, does that signal a shift in thinking in that letter?
A shift in thinking. I think it signals, and first of all, I want to give credit for those powerful words to Justice Yu, because I think saying it in exactly that way, that though we are an institution that cleaves to precedent, our precedent recognizes that we will reconsider past decisions when they are incorrect and harmful. So those are actually terms of art in our law. So it's not enough because of the commitment to, I guess, finality and stability in the law, that those things must be shown. But I think it's also important that the letter continues and says the systemic oppression of Black Americans is not only incorrect and harmful, it's shameful and deadly. And, you know, this is not just a legal shift. So I guess the way I look at it is, and this is one of the reasons that I'm so gratified the court, all nine justices, issued this letter, is it's a statement of saying we are acting in a judicial role when we make this statement, because the institution, we've got to keep it real. It needs to respond and change and adjust to address injustices. So that's probably my favorite paragraph in the whole letter, because I think it's important to recognize this isn't us stepping out of our role. This is us acknowledging that when the law is incorrect and harmful, we have an obligation to take action.
Justice Yu, I see you nodding.
Yeah, I think, you know, the chief is right in terms of us stepping into our role. And I also want to give some credit here to the extent that it was the chief's idea when she saw that some other Supreme Courts were beginning to issue some statements and letters. She wanted to do something. And that's a shift for somebody like me who's been in the judicial system for, you know, 20 years, to have a white female who happens to be the chief say, "I feel like we've got to do something," was really important. And I would say that makes such a difference for me to have that kind of leadership and aware of the fact that maybe she doesn't have the words to express it, but the desire to do this, to me, shifted something in my own mind about the power of the court, the responsibility that we have to speak. So I, again, wanted to just to give the chief some credit here for coming up with the idea and then having everybody participate in saying, yes, this is something we want to declare and say.
I think the general public can think of the court as a very reactive body. You wait for cases to arrive, and then you decide. And in this case, you're not waiting for a case to show up on your docket. You are taking action now. Is that unusual? And I would imagine having it come from the Supreme Court sends a signal to the lower courts that's very powerful as well. Justice Whitener.
What isn't usual about these circumstances is the visibility of what occurred to Mr. Floyd that mandated, in my opinion, the court's response. Yes, we're not usually proactive, but this was an instance where the court needed to send a message out as to where the court stood in regards to this issue that is affecting so many individuals. Most folks forget that they have a court until they're in trouble. So to hear from the court and have the court take a stance on something that is affecting not just individuals that come into the court, but we are reaching out to the community and embracing them with these strong words, I think was rather soothing to the community that is affected, which was my community. And being the youngest one on the bench, not youngest in age, but, you know, the newest one, and have my colleagues embrace me and embrace this feeling of you're not alone in this and we're going to say something about it was extremely empowering for me.
Justice Whitener, you and Justice Yu are both co-chairs of the Minorities and Justice Commission, and I'm hoping that you both can talk a little more about some of the issues it's trying to address.
The remarkable thing about our Supreme Court is that we actually have commissions. And this commission, the Minority and Justice Commission, has been in place since 1990. So it's not new. It has been the voice within the court system that has focused on eradicating racism at every level within our court operations. I would like to say we've been successful, but the fact is we've made a little dent here and there, but more importantly, we keep trying, right? We keep trying to educate judges about their responsibilities. So we've looked at pretrial issues. We've looked at the problem of legal financial obligations. We have been very involved in trying to diversify the jury pool. So there's been a lot of things that we have taken on over the years, including the over-incarceration of minority individuals. The real question of civil rights and police brutality has been on the agenda of the Minority and Justice Commission. It's not something we haven't talked about in the past. So in one sense, we've been there. We're going to continue to address it. And if anything, maybe we have some new momentum to have a serious discussion about a tough topic. The one thing that the commission has been able to do that I would dare say no one else can do is to bring all the voices together at the table. We've been very, very successful at moderating discussions, at having thoughtful exchanges on some very tough issues. So I have to say that I am very delighted that Justice Whitener last year accepted the responsibility of co-chairing this commission with me because of her experience, her voice, and her credibility in the world of education.
Justice Whitener, I know you've been a voice for making sure, I mean, many things, but among them, making sure that who is sitting on the bench in courtrooms reflects the communities they're serving. Why is that important?
It's important because perspectives matter. The law is about decision making. And if you have more insight into an issue, then the decision is likely to be more informed. So having different experiences and different backgrounds of judicial officers at the table, and it's not just race, you have sexual orientation, you have religion, you have gender, you have immigration status. The more varied a person is, they bring more to the table as far as the discussion. But what's also important, I also believe, is diversity and experience. So not just having prosecutors as judges or defense attorneys as judges or public defenders, we need to get more of a varied background on the judiciary. So perspectives matter.
I would imagine that's true whether you are appearing in court as a plaintiff or a defendant, or even if you just look at the court and say, I might be able to do that someday.
Correct. And that's why it's important that we, as judicial officers, mentor. I know, Justice, you mentored me. Justice Deborah Stevens mentored me. Justice Mary Fairhurst mentored me. Is being able to look at someone and say, you're worthy, you're valuable, and you can get to the next step. But mentoring isn't just to become judicial officers. There are different parts of the criminal justice system or the justice system that needs players. So mentoring, you know, we need good law enforcement officers. It's very evident that that's what we need now. So it's about mentoring. It's about giving back to the community you came from.
And Chief Justice Stevens, you've spoken on this program before about being the first in your family to go to college, a first-generation college student, and the importance of mentors along the way for you, too.
No, I completely agree with Justice Whitener. It's huge. I mean, I can think of every step in my own path from a kid who never saw herself doing anything like this. There are faces that go with that experience, you know, people who changed my life forever. And I feel like we all have that responsibility. It's the creation of the world you want to live in, and you have to reach out and sometimes help people see maybe what they don't see in themselves.
Justice Hugh, you were going to make a point.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, some people might ask, well, why does it matter at the end of the day? Well, you know, it really matters in terms of our credibility. Because if you're a Black man and you walk into a courtroom and you don't see anybody who looks like you, do you really think you have a fair shot at being treated fairly? Do you really think the process is going to be fair if nobody can understand your life experience? I doubt it. The Minority and Justice Commission undertook a study in 2012, and then we updated it in 2014 to ask whether or not people had any confidence in the system of justice in the state of Washington. And people of color consistently had less confidence in our ability to be fair because they looked around and they didn't see people like them. And the sad reality for every judge in the state of Washington, some judges might want to take the position, well, this issue with law enforcement has nothing to do with us. And yet again, this study proves that when people think about the justice system, we're all wrapped up in it together. When people have a bad experience with a law enforcement officer, they associate us with that same bad experience. They're not drawing the distinctions to say, well, no, judges are not like that. We're in this together, and that's why it matters. We have to care about the quality of justice at every level. And when it looks like us and reflects us across the board, I think the more confidence people will have in this system, not only in truth and reality, but in the perception of it.
So what are some of the things the court can do directly to affect these issues?
Well, I'll speak to that first, but speaking to the commission. So we have the Minority and Justice Commission, a Gender and Justice Commission, a Commission on Children and Youth in Foster Care, and an Interpreter Commission, which is increasingly doing more work on language access. And those commissions are critical in convening conversations and the hard work, not just within the judicial branch, but across sectors, and I think challenging the temptation some people have to compartmentalize, you know, that, well, this has nothing to do with me, or that may be an issue, but I do this. I think the commissions, which it's important that they are Supreme Court commissions, because we can be thought leaders in saying that you create a justice system through intentionality. It's not just a response to a case that comes up through the pipeline. Yeah, so I think that's a critical way that Supreme Courts can and should be influencers. And you know, I think we're all proud to serve on a court that for 25, 30 years has been a national leader in creating those kind of commissions and boards to focus on building a more just system administratively, in addition to just, you know, or apart from just deciding cases. I guess I should say in conjunction, because that's not compartmentalized either.
All of you have experience across the profession, but Justice Whitener, yours is most recently having stepped out of the trial court and into the Supreme Court. What are some of the things that you saw at Pierce County Superior Court that made you think about how the justice system is working and that you're thinking about now in this new role?
I've had some wonderful experiences in Pierce County Superior Court. I've had some terrible experiences in Pierce County Superior Court. More pertinent to what we're discussing here today. I was stopped by a security officer once after the building was closed and I used my access card to get in. He was white. my wife and I were going into my chambers. He wanted us to be screened. I refused. I asked for his supervisor. When his supervisor came down, the supervisor recognized me and said, "Judge Whitener." My picture was on the wall with 21 other colleagues. My courtroom was around the corner. And his face got red. And when he heard Judge Whitener, his response to me was, "You should have told me." And my response to him was, "It shouldn't have mattered because it's clear I belong in the building." The next day I put on the Color of Justice program, where I brought in judicial officers, females from all varied backgrounds, ethnicities, as well as experiences, a few months later. And we brought in girls, actually, from marginalized backgrounds. So I used myself as a model and brought them into the courtroom. It was very successful. Unfortunately, I ended up on a white supremacist website where I was called the N-word and trying to empower and inspire the N children. These are realities that occur in regards to the profession. I was approached by an African-American female attorney regarding her observations in regards to a court proceeding where a commissioner used the word nappy hair, you know. So we still have a lot of work. And he used that word in referring to a litigant in his courtroom. We still have a lot of work to do. The difference you will find now, I believe, is that we're tired of being silent about it. We're ready to have changes occur. Racialized policing is nothing new. Overrepresentation of Black individuals in our criminal justice system is nothing new. The difference is there's a momentum to make change. And it is my hope, and I know with my colleagues on the bench, which is why the letter went out, that we do some changes and we do some work to eliminate, if possible, but at least undermine the institutional and structural racism that is present in our legal system. We need to educate our judicial officers. Not all of us come from the same experiences and backgrounds. That is why it was very important that judicial officer was informed that the word nappy, when you're referring to a Black individual, is offensive. He genuinely did not know, which was surprising to me. But again, it's a give and take. So I had to be open to the fact that he honestly did not know. So it's not about being quiet anymore. It's about confronting it and trying to address it. And I think that's the road and the path we're on right now. And I hope we continue on it.
Chief Justice Stevens, you've been on the court more than a decade. How have you seen the Supreme Court's response to systemic racism change in that time?
Well, we just issued a letter signed by all 9 justices of the court, taking a strong stand. I'm not sure at what point in our history that could have been possible. But I also don't think that the words in that letter could have been written. It matters who is on the court. And it matters that those perspectives of Helen, of Mary be heard. That matters in the conversation. So that has changed everything in my time on the court. 7 of the 9 justices are women. And we are busy with a lot of commission and committee and board work and the men too. Everybody steps up. But I think that's a new kind of court. You know, I still have colleagues around the nation, chief justices on other courts, and, you know, their main job is just deciding the cases that come in front of them. And I think all of us on the Washington Supreme Court would say that's maybe half our job, maybe not even half, because we want to be out there in the justice community. So you remind me, I've been on the court over a decade, which time flies, but, you know, a lot has changed.
Justice Yu, what changes have you seen in your time on the court?
Wow. I would say when I look around and I see how racially diverse we are, in fact, the most diverse court in the world, I have to just say it's like a new day for me. I never thought I'd be on the court, much less now be seated with people like, right, Justice Whitener, Justice Raquel Montoya Lewis, Justice Gonzalez. It is astounding to me. I have to pinch myself when I wake up in the morning and say, how lucky am I that that I get to work with such intelligent people who care, who understand what it feels like, right? It's not my problem. It is society's problem when racism looks at us. I don't have to second guess myself. I can look at my colleague and we get it. And I can't tell you how empowering that really is as a woman, as a judge, as a lawyer, and just as a person in society. And so everything has changed. And I would say that letter has changed my own mind as well in terms of the ability of this court to try to awaken in every judge the responsibility we have to correct what we've been not doing, right? To correct the course of action, to correct the path going forward. And that just excites me.
Justice Whitener, I know you were just appointed to the Supreme Court earlier this year in April, but you've been obviously paying attention to it and to the justice system for years and years and years. So what changes have you seen?
I think the biggest change I've seen is the depth of compassion, empathy, hard work, and my new colleagues put into their decisions and coming up with their decisions. It's not just about trying to do the best that they can. It's about some sort of determination that comes from really deep within of wanting to make the best decision that has the broadest impact. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to making a decision, but to hear the input from others, it's different. It's enlightening. I think a big change for me is not necessarily that I'm here, but it's the impact of me being here has had on my community. That's been different for me because I really didn't think it would matter that much, but it has, and it has mattered on so many different levels that I'm humbled by it.
What have you heard to that end?
Well, I have young girls indicating to me it's possible they want to be a Supreme Court justice. I got interviewed by an 8-year-old, Brooklyn, and she was amazing. She almost made me cry when she said that. Internationally, my country, it's almost like they went to a whole new carnival. Because we have carnival at home. They had, they were very, very proud and very happy. And then I was surprised by coverage in Italy and Germany. It really surprised me, the international impact it has had. So it's a humbling experience. That's the biggest change for me.
You are people who care about the world. You're paying attention to the world. You're also people who operate within the structure of a legal system that is bound by narrow parameters sometimes. And I'm wondering if you can speak to the things you wrestle with as a judge and as a human being, which are sometimes one and the same and sometimes different roles. I wonder if you can speak to some of the things that you wrestle with and what happens now going forward.
Yeah, no, that's a very provocative question. I think the thing that has settled into my brain in the time I've been a judge, and starting in 2007, is how committed I am to our democratic institutions, how much I just feel that in my bones, that the ideals behind, how we want to live as a society are really in our hands. I mean, in our collective hands. And so I never really see the role of a judge as in tension with my role as an engaged member of a society. What I do see is that judges are not just fixers. I used to say, my kids appreciated this. I said, I get to play mom at home. I don't put on a black robe to play mom. But I think there's not a tension. There's just an understanding of the press forward and the commitment to the values on which this country was founded. I still think, we have to own that and take the country where we want it to be. And I just feel lucky every day to be in this role and be able to participate in that at every level.
Justice Whitener?
It's a strange dynamic because I'm always and have always been the other, the outside the box. So having to work within a structure where you're inside a box, I've always felt that I always have to work on figuring out how to use my voice, because my voice has always been the view from the other, which was exclusion, and having to deal within a structure that has been exclusively not me, and trying to work within that structure in fostering change within it so it can be more inclusive of others. That's been the struggle for me ever since I joined the judiciary.
Justice Hugh, what do you wrestle with?
I wrestle with being patient. I feel like I'm probably among the most impatient people that I know. I don't have time to wait for justice. I'm not setting something up for the future. I want to see it now. So for me, I think about the law as something that's not fixed. It responds to situations. You know, every case reflects the values of a community at any given time. And so I think I'd like to see our cases do the same. We have core legal principles that are uniform and that are continuous throughout history. But the application of those values and those principles and those ideas to a new context and a new set of facts is what keeps me coming every single day. So do I want to see faster change? Absolutely. Am I impatient? Absolutely. And I'm excited that there is a revolution of thinking going on now about a new possibility of justice being realized. And so I wrestle with that every day, just being impatient.
Justice Mary Yu, Justice Helen Whitener, and Chief Justice Deborah Stevens, thank you so much for taking the time to talk through these complicated and difficult things. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Ed.